You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. One of the toughest things today in business is how everyone says that you need to be innovative to survive the Ubers, the disruptors, and the prop tech wave. But how do you know what you should do first? Now, imagine that running a technology company where you need to listen to your users, keep them happy, and innovate to stay ahead. This is where we're going in this week's podcast with CEO of Rockend, Alistair Maple Brown. Rockend was started by Alistair's father, Tony Maple Brown, back in 1979. In the early years, the company worked on a range of general accounting solutions before focusing on property and strata management apps. In 2012, Rockend launched Australia's first true cloud-based property management solution called Property Tree, which now has links and APIs into other leading cloud systems on a global scale such as Xero and MailChimp. Today, Rockend is also an employer of choice and this year a finalist in five CSIA categories for excellence in customer service. A humble and approachable leader in every sense of the word, Alistair talks us through what the journey to the cloud should mean for agents, what it takes to become an employer of choice, and what are some of the exciting things that Rockend are working on right now.
Welcome to the podcast, Alistair Maple Brown.
Thanks, Sam.
It's amazing to get you on here. I know you're a busy man, and congratulations firstly before we get into anything else for being announced as finalists in not one but six CSIA Customer Service Awards. That's amazing recognition.
Thank you. Yeah, no, look, we're really delighted about it actually.
And in the same week you're also shortlisted as an employer of choice amongst some really big organisations by the Human Resources Institute of Australia. So amazing. So first of all, what is your secret to providing world-class service? Because the CSIA Awards, you're up against not just companies in the real estate industry, but you're up against big companies like American Express.
Look, I think customer service as a concept is a part of every single business, and it's very easy for businesses to say that's how we differentiate. It's our service that's differentiated. But I firmly believe that it's the DNA of this company, begun by the founder, Tony Maple Brown, because he understood inherently that if you listen to your customers and provide them with a service and then you back it up with really solid service, no matter what it takes to do, then your customers really appreciate that. They recognise that, they understand that. And for the last almost 40 years, it has become almost part of the DNA that it's not the product that you build, it's not the marketing that you provide, but ultimately it comes down to the long-term service through multiple touch points that you create for your customers on day one, on day 10, on day 100, on day 2000, that have to not only be consistent, but they also have to be heartfelt. And there's a tone of voice, there's an attitude that when a customer calls and they're calling you for a reason because they need your help, that you're actually there to genuinely help them. And it can be a little bit cliched, but that's what we strive to do. And geez, we don't get it right all the time. In fact, we get it wrong a fair bit. But I think we aspire to always improve, whether it be the way we help people understand the importance of what they do, whether it's the systems that we put in place, whether it's the broader training. There are lots of different elements, I suppose, to it, but it's a core piece of what we believe is important and what we provide for our customers.
So customer service is the new marketing, right?
It's the experience.
Yeah.
It's exactly right. Exactly right.
This company has grown over the years. There's a lot more staff out there now. How do you manage to get that service experience to be consistent across everybody?
It's a great question. It is harder to do now as we've grown. But, I mean, in the overall scheme of things, we are still a relatively small business compared to some of these other huge businesses. I think as we've evolved and we've welcomed new people into the business that have experience in some of these larger organisations, that they understand how to build the consistency, how to leverage the DNA and the attitude, but then to build the consistency. And that's through systems and an overall approach that I think has evolved. When I think back even 5 years, the way we did things at the core, the end result was still very similar. But now the way we go about it, the consistency and the speed with which we do it is so much more advanced and so much more effective. And clients over time have been able to experience that improved evolution.
So there's always interesting things going on at Rockhand because you're a technology company and obviously you're one of the big innovators of the real estate industry. So what's one thing that you're working on right now and how are you making that happen?
Well, I'll touch on a couple. The first one is the mobile piece. We all expect today that mobile is inherent and access to data is inherent. One of the things that has been a promise within business for a long, long time is the ability to know who's calling you when they're calling you. And I think it's been available in a lot of systems through CRM and through all sorts of different mechanisms. And we take it for granted as individuals because we have our friends and our contacts in our phones. So when they're calling us, we know who they are.
That's it, yeah.
But I think the difference is when you have business systems able to do that and provide that consistency of service. So one of the very small innovations we're running at the moment is for our customers to be able to identify on their own phones who the individual is that's calling, whether it's a tradesperson, a landlord, a tenant, or someone else at the point when they're calling. They may not be in their phone contacts, but they're in the broader database. In many respects, it's not overly groundbreaking because, as I said, we all expect it as individuals because the number's in our phone. But I think for a broader system, it's going to make a difference because it's going to give our customers that small edge to say, hi, Sam, how are you going? And know exactly who you are. You're a landlord. You own property A and B. And which property can we talk about? You're already partway through that
conversation. So you're on the front foot when someone's calling rather than, hello, who's speaking, please?
Exactly. And quickly, let me get the context with who you are. I've just spoken to 10 tenants and are you a tenant or are you a landlord and so forth. So that's a small innovation that we're doing. I think the other piece is around data. So a lot of talk about data and how data can be used for mining and artificial intelligence and all that sort of great stuff. What we're doing right now is from a fundamental level is to be able to provide groups of businesses as well as individual businesses some really rich reporting and insights into their data. And that's going to allow groups, whether they be official groups or ad hoc groups, to be able to compare themselves to each other and to really get some strong insights from which they can then make adjustments in their business, which is ultimately what the data is for.
Yeah. If you're not using your data smartly, then you're kind of missing out.
It's just data.
Yeah, massive opportunities there.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's often the challenge with data. It's like, wow, look at this data. What do I do with it?
Yeah.
You've actually got to be able to know if the data says this, well, then that's the next step and that's the impact that knowing that data will have.
Yeah. And so you're helping your clients recognize some of those journeys now as well.
Yeah. And pull a lot of that stuff that sits in these systems and pull it out and hit people in the face with it.
You've got two major products out there now. You've got REST, which is that's been out there for a long time, and you've also got Property Tree, which is quite new and a cloud-based product, and they're quite different. And you've also said that you're going to support customers indefinitely. You don't have to move to the cloud, but there would have to be a lot of people out there now who are thinking about moving to the cloud. So what advice would you give to those people who are perhaps a bit worried about it?
It's a really interesting discussion, and I think there are so many facets to this. I think in business, the challenge is often you're looking for the silver bullet that's going to solve all your problems. And whether you're running software A, software B, software C, there's no silver bullet because obviously it's people who use software and it's the processes that wrap around software. But there are huge differences, though, with what the move to cloud actually brings at a fundamental level. When you think of desktop software and the era that that was built in, it allowed you to achieve an end objective, but it was very singular in nature. So it was the operator doing task A, B, C through to Z and their colleagues within the office providing a service. We are now all connected on platforms so that we all know what's going on automatically, whether it be an alert, whether it be a bit of data that's pushed through to us, whether it's the fact that we want to go and look for some more information and purely the fact that we can do it in our hands 24/7. So as consumers, we want that sort of access. So therefore, in the real estate space and in particular property management, taking you to the cloud actually unlocks all of this potential for improved communications with your constituents, tenants, owners, with everyone.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's not that you want to move to the cloud because you don't want a piece of tin in your office.
Yeah.
You want to move to the cloud because it allows you to run your business differently and to cater to the growing demands of your end customers who want access to information. They want it now. They want it on mobile phones. They want to know what you've done in relation to something. They want to be informed when something's completed. And all of this sort of stuff driven through a cloud infrastructure, and we take for granted the Facebooks and the LinkedIns and the Gmail and all of this sort of stuff, but that's effectively what is now the norm. And it needs to happen in a business environment as well. A business providing a service around property needs to provide those types of facilities. So that's really where it enables businesses to fundamentally change the way they operate. The fact that you don't have to worry about infrastructure and tin backups, that's a bonus from my perspective, but it shouldn't be the reason why you would want to move. Once again, the reason to move is because it allows you to more closely cater to the changing demands of your customers.
The other thing that we've talked about too is the idea of having the best services, and with Property Tree particularly, you don't have to have a piece of software that does everything, including making coffee of a morning.
Exactly right.
Yeah, so for people not familiar with Property Tree and how that's built, can you just give us a bit of a rundown of the thinking behind how Property Tree was created?
In the world of desktop software, the ability to share data back and forth with different systems is really difficult, and primarily because it sits within a secure environment behind a firewall in an office. Once you move to the cloud, it sits within a very secure environment, but inherently it is able to be interacted with from other sources of data. The grandfather of software as a service is Salesforce.com across the globe. They have a huge network of third-party applications that can share data with and take data out securely and within a framework, so that people can leverage all this wonderful technology that's being built in all of these different areas that are very niche. So our objective is to unlock the potential of all of these wonderful pieces of software that exist in the real estate space to allow users to integrate, share data back and forth, and to run more effective businesses, provide improved services for their customers and so forth. No longer is it a situation where one provider has to do everything. That is long gone. And another really simple analogy is when you think of Apple having built the App Store, wonderful platform, and all of the incredible applications that sit on top of that platform to enable the end user to access it, very little of that stuff, or a tiny, tiny fraction, is built by Apple, built by the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And so it's everyone's IP working together that integrates and everyone's better off.
So this interview is part of a series we like to call the Leadership Diaries, where we ask leaders like yourself a series of questions to gain some insights on leadership, people that might be considering the move. You know, teams are such a big trend in the industry right now. So are you ready for some leadership questions?
Oh, I'll give it a shot.
Moving out of the cloud and into leadership.
Yeah, exactly. The important stuff.
So first up, what was your first job and what did it teach you?
My first job, I worked at a pub. I did odd jobs through high school, but then my first job immediately on finishing high school was working in a pub, and I was a ceramic technician. That's another word for a dishwasher.
And
we've all been there. So I did that while at university, and Friday nights and Saturday nights I worked at this little pub in Chippendale in Sydney, and I was a ceramic technician. And then after about a year, I progressed to working behind the bar and so forth. What it taught me is just get in there, have a crack and work hard. And anyone who works in hospitality will know that hospitality is a hard gig, but it's a fantastic place to start.
It's a straight MBA in customer service, I think.
It's exactly right. That's exactly right. So it was great fun.
What does the first hour of your day look like and how does it go after that? Are you a 5 a.m. clubber or?
I'm definitely not a 5 a.m. clubber. Because those 5 a.m. clubbers actually wake up and get out of bed. I'll often wake up, but I won't choose to get out of bed. And generally the wake-up's not by design. It's because my mind's already started racing. Mm. I like to get up at about 6 and I refrain as much as possible to grabbing the smartphone and looking through the news. Although if there's a particular sporting event that's going on in another part of the world, I'll generally open up and get the results for that. I love a bit of sport. I make breakfast for our kids and get ready to go to work, and then I'm out the door generally by 7:45-ish.
What about when you hit the office?
I sit down, I'll get my laptop fired up, plug it in to all the different peripherals on my desk. I'll set up a new page in my notepad that's dated with half a dozen of the key things that I've got to do for the day. And then if I'm not finishing off reading a little bit of news, first thing I do with my team is at 8:48 every morning, we have a 10-minute stand-up.
8:48?
Yep. It's absolutely.
That's very exact.
It is very exact, because if it's 8:45 or it's 8:30 or if it's 9 o'clock, you might be a minute late, 2 minutes late. You know, it's sort of around 9 o'clock. But if it's 8:48, everyone knows absolutely spot on that's when it starts.
Yeah.
And that's a Patrick Lencioni trick. If you create meetings at weird times, then people will follow.
So they won't be late.
So they won't be late.
That's a great tip.
Yeah.
I might try that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Actually works. And so we've got to be done within 10 minutes. So people are done by 9 o'clock. And it means that others in that group can then actually kick their meetings off at 9 or 9:03 or 9:05, which a number of them do.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Can you name someone that has had a tremendous impact on you as a leader?
I think my old man, definitely. He is a great leader, I believe, because he genuinely cares for people, takes a genuine interest in everyone.
Mm.
And I think at the core, that gives you a wonderful baseline to work from. And he's always been like that. But I always enjoyed the style of Barack Obama because I felt that he was a very authentic leader. He knew that he didn't have all the answers. He never even tried to make it out that he did have all the answers, and in fact was very comfortable in laughing at himself and pointing out all of his foibles. And that type of vulnerability then shows that he's a real person,
that
just
you're human,
that he's human and he's trying to do a job, bloody hell, the hardest job in the world. And he would say it as it is. If something was shit, he'd say it's shit. And if something was great, he'd say it's great. And he was happy to go anywhere in the middle of all of that. So I really enjoyed experiencing and seeing that on a global scale. I think there are so many great leaders around. And I look at someone like Mike Cannon-Brookes from Atlassian. He and his co-founder, once again, they're just real people.
Yeah.
And they say it as it is. And they know they don't have all the answers. But, geez, they give it a great crack, and look how wonderfully successful
those guys have been. Amazingly successful.
Yeah, it's just such a great story.
Yeah. Where do great ideas in this business come from?
Great ideas come from so many different areas. Everyone has different ideas, different perspectives, and they often come together with people's different perspectives and different experiences and the, hey, what about this, or have you thought of that, or imagine if. A lot of those types of discussions get thrown around, but ideas come from everyone.
Yeah, this is a really creative place though. You know, I've been for the walk around here. I reckon there'd be a heap of innovative ideas just in the coffee room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people are always, I don't know what it is, but they're always sort of thinking, what is it that we could be doing? How could we be doing it? Or have we thought of this? One of our challenges is how do you act on the right ones, because there are so many.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you that, actually. How do you, with in a company that is so innovative, like people must be throwing ideas at you all the time, how do you make the decision on which ones to pursue?
It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And while I would love to have a beautiful answer to that, as the business evolves and grows, you go through different periods of focus. So whether it's focus on a particular area of a product or focus on a particular area of the way we run the business, everyone's input at a point in time is going to be unique to what it would be the following month.
Mm.
So we take that input, continually challenge ourselves, how will that impact the customer? How will that impact the employee experience, positive, negative, neutral? And how does that then impact our broader objectives as a business? And when you keep the customer at the forefront, your team members at the forefront, and then the overarching objectives right there in front of you, then generally speaking, you'll come to an agreement that, you know what, this comes before that and that comes before this. But the reality is it's impossible to get that right every time.
Yeah.
And some things you'll get to the end of finishing something and you go, geez, why did we do that? We should have done something different. You do the best you can with the inputs that you have. And I know that one of my challenges as an individual is the search for more input, but you're never going to get all the input. You're never going to get it always right. I think there's a judgment call, and hopefully I'm getting a little bit better at this, and hopefully we're all getting a little bit better at this, is making a judgment call to say, you know what, we've got enough data, let's just make a decision. If the decision's wrong, yeah, we'll change it. It's easy to say.
Yeah.
It's much harder to do because the impact can sometimes be really big or not so big.
Yeah. Everything's a test till it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Rockend is an employer of choice. What is your favourite question to ask someone in a job interview?
It's a boring question, but I think it's an important one. A boring one is to say, today is day one. You have the job. What will you do? So you put them in that seat and you think, okay, well, I've got through all of this stuff that we're going through right now. For me, that gives me an insight into the way they would plan, the way they would approach day one, because I believe that day one through day 10, depending on the business and depending on someone's experience and relative experience to a business, your opportunity when you're new is to listen, observe and learn and ask and absorb and all that sort of stuff. If someone says they're going to hit the ground running on day one and they're going to do this and they're going to do that, they're going to do this, I'm like, oof, you haven't observed and you haven't absorbed and listened and so forth. So that's an important question for me.
Good question.
I also like to ask the question, depending on how much the person knows about the business, if they're not from industry and we're bringing them into non-industry specific roles, say an administrative type of role, then it's maybe not so necessary. But for someone who knows the industry and knows Rockend, I ask them, knowing what you know about Rockend, what would you do differently if you were inside? And so that gives me an understanding of their perspective and their willingness to bring a new idea in. And I always encourage people at our induction meetings when I get an opportunity to meet everyone who comes into the business, is that one of the huge pieces of value that you all bring to this business is the perspective that you have that's fresh. So you can ask questions to say, why do we do it that way? That doesn't make sense, as opposed to just accepting what's here. So if I can get a feel for people's perception of what we do from an outsider's perspective, then that will help give me an idea of how they'll be able to add in building the business.
How do you get someone new coming into the business to understand the values and the culture of the business?
Yeah, it's a good question. Look, it's interesting, as we've grown, we've struggled more with this because at our core, we do have a really solid set of values, but it's almost by evolution and the DNA, what we were talking about earlier, not necessarily by design. As the business has grown more quickly over recent years, we've had to put in place processes. And the first go we did, I don't believe personally that we did it right. What we did is to create a set of guiding values, but it was kind of prescriptive and it was nice and graphical in the way we presented it, but it didn't really explain a lot. It didn't give a lot of meat on the bones.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became a little bit clinical, which is the opposite of what you're really trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And so then we got to a point where we realized, you know what, I believe that we all come to work with the same intent. How do we document that? And the reason why I think we all come to work with the same intent is because you wouldn't be here if you didn't have that core intent. Sure, we all have slight variations. But how do we surface all that without doing it by committee?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes doing that sort of stuff by committee doesn't necessarily work because everyone's got all their different perspectives. And so what we did in this particular example is taking the theory that a fish rots from the head. Hopefully the opposite is also true.
Yeah.
So I sat down, I think I was on a flight. I was like, you know what, bugger this. I'm just going to put down what I think are our guiding behaviours. Then it was really simple. It's like 12 to 15 lines, but it was not a single word. It was half a sentence really. Then we discussed that as a leadership group, and then we said, you know, we tweaked it and we pulled a couple of things out, but we didn't do a lot with it really because it was what it was.
Mm.
And we then thrashed that out with our HR team to put it in to more communicable pieces. And we came up with a guiding behaviours that has five pillars. It's care, talk straight, get shit done, be curious and candor.
Right.
So they're the five, and we've now shared that with the whole team. And because it was easy to digest and communicate and talk about, it was therefore an easy process to get it across the whole business. So it's still relatively early, but we're working it into the interview process and then just the overall leadership and management process. Does it fit into our guiding behaviours? Yes or no. Does it not? Yes or no. And so that's really actually brought the hidden DNA more to the surface.
What is the book that you've most gifted to other people?
That is a good question. It goes in phases. The one that we've given the most out from Daniel, the founder of a thank you group, Thank You Water and Thank You Products and lots of stuff. He's an amazing guy. And so wrote a book called Chapter One. Yeah. So we gave hundreds of copies away of that book.
Last of all, what advice would you give someone going into a leadership position for the first time?
The advice I would give would be, first of all, recognize that you haven't done it before and you're going to stuff it up, and that's okay. So there's no problems there. You are never expected to get it right first time, and you will learn that you continuously don't get it right. But as long as you're learning and making note, then that's the main thing. The other piece of advice would be just to listen. Listen to how you can facilitate and help people get out of their way. And that's one of the things that I'm really working on at the moment is how do I get out of the way, get off the playing field, let my team do the work and get on with it. Yeah, so I'd say recognize that you haven't done it before and you're going to make mistakes, and that's absolutely cool. And if you're a little bit petrified, then that's fine too. And then just listen. And if you listen a lot, that'll give you the clues to how people want to work and how you can manage certain people and help them and so on and so forth. And last piece I would say is that being in a leadership position is about enabling and facilitating others to do great work, not to have the answers and to do the work. And hierarchies are wrong because they start at the top and they move down.
Mm.
If you flip them the other way and you start at the bottom and you move up, the customer sits at the top and everyone who interacts with the customer sits at the top, and then it trickles down to the CEO who's helping the next team, who's helping the next team, who's helping the next team, who are helping the people who are working with the customers. And I think it's a better way to think of.
So it's about lifting people up rather than the other way.
Correct.
Around.
Yeah. Okay.
Great advice. Alistair Maple-Brown, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Sam. Lovely to talk to you.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.